Senator, welcome, and we'll give you 3 minutes for an opening statement. There will be 8 questions by our panelists, and then we'll give you 10 minutes to have a closing statement.
Ken, thanks very much. I apologize for not being with you. We thought that there were going to be votes here last night, and I'm in D.C. right now. You know, I was just thinking, I have worked over the years with many of you. Ken, thank you for chatting with me the many times that I've been in Iowa. Rich, I was thinking, I don't know, it was 15, 20 years ago, we had you in Burlington, Vermont, a huge turnout. You did a great job. Frederick, needless to say, you and I have worked long and hard on postal issues. Jane, thank you for what you're doing with AFGE. And Jen, I was just at the ARA event in D.C. Last month to talk about how we're going to expand Social Security, not cut it. I guess the point that I want to make, for me, workers' rights and fighting to protect the middle class and supporting trade unionism is not just another issue. It is what my life is about. It's what I believe. My dad and my mom never had a whole lot of money. I grew up in a lower middle class family. And the fight to make sure that every person in this country can live with dignity, can have a decent paying job, can have health care as a right, when they retire, to have decent Social Security benefits, that is part of who I am as a human being. And I am proud to have not only a 98% lifetime voting record with the AFL-CIO over a 25-year period, which I think is probably as good as anybody else in the Congress, but more than that, for me, it's not just voting the right way. I have been on picket lines in Vermont and elsewhere with workers when they've been on strike. I have used my office, whether it is Mayor of Burlington, whether in the House, in the Senate, to help workers form unions. And I've stood with workers who are under attack, and their unions have been under attack, to try to protect them. I want to thank all of you in these really tough times when we're struggling to preserve the American middle class for all that you are doing. I am proud to have worked with you for many years. I look forward to working with you in the future as your president. So thank you very much for the opportunity to be with you today.
Senator, first of all, let me say thank you for joining us today. And secondly, let me say thank you for being a warrior for working people, not just lately, but for your entire career. All of us are living a little bit better because of that, and we want to say thank you for those efforts. You've earned them. Now, I know you're going to find this to be a really tough question. Would you support raising the minimum wage, federal minimum wage, and to what level? And what specific steps would you take to raise wages for all Americans, not just those making minimum wage?
Yeah, Rich, you got me. That's a tough, tough question. As you know, we recently introduced legislation to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. And the reason that I did that is that I have the very radical belief that if somebody works 40 hours a week, that person should not be living in poverty. The current minimum wage of $7.25 an hour, that's a radical idea. You know, in my state, in Iowa, all over this country, you have people working 2 or 3 jobs to cobble together some income, to get some health care. We need to create an economy that works for working families in the middle class and not just the billionaires. So we're going to fight for a $15 an hour minimum wage. Also, when you talk about how we create decent jobs, we have introduced a piece of legislation, $1 trillion over a 5-year period, to rebuild our crumbling infrastructure, roads, bridges, water systems, wastewater plants, airports, our rail. And when you do that, $1 trillion over 5 years creates up to 13 million decent paying jobs. And when we talk about jobs, it's not only creating jobs, it's preventing the loss of jobs, which means ending our disastrous trade policies. Rich, you know, because you and I have worked on this thing. You got a senator and former member of the House who voted against NAFTA, against CAFTA, against PNTR with China, and is helping to lead the effort against the TPP, another disastrous trade agreement. So those are some of my views on that issue.
Thanks, Bern.
Senator Sanders, you pretty much answered the next question, which is that the United States lags behind other nations when it comes to investing in infrastructure. What specific infrastructure improvements need to be made for the United States to be competitive globally, and how would you fund them?
It is an absolute embarrassment that in this great country, I mean, just take a deep breath and think about it. Forever, we had an infrastructure, roads, bridges, rail system, water plants, wastewater plants, that were the envy of the world. We were cutting edge in terms of technology. And now we are falling further and further behind many other countries. In my state, all over America, we have bridges that you cannot go over. We have a rail system which is way behind Europe, Japan, even China. We have airports that are outdated. So as I mentioned a moment ago, if we're going to make America more efficient, more productive, and safer, if we are going to create the millions of jobs that we need to do what the Republicans refuse to do, and that is invest significantly in rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure. How do you pay for it? Well, let me just suggest to you that in the last 30 years, we have seen a huge transfer of wealth that has gone from working families and the middle class to the top 0.1%. When the rich and large corporations are doing phenomenally well, you're looking at someone who, if elected president, will tell those guys that they're going to have to start paying their fair share of taxes. No more loopholes, no more Cayman Islands. We're going to ask Wall Street to start paying a speculation tax. We can raise substantial sums of revenue to rebuild our infrastructure, to make public colleges and universities tuition-free, and the wealthy and large corporations are going to have to fund those processes.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Senator Sanders. Let me just take this opportunity to thank you for being our champion on postal reform year after year.
Senator Sanders, our immigration system is broken, tearing families apart and creating a shadow economy that allows unscrupulous employers to exploit workers. What would you do to resolve this important issue?
Well, Frederick, let me just pick up on the point you make and tell you a little story, if I might. Back in 2007, I went to Immokalee, a town called Immokalee, Florida. It turns out that Immokalee is where most of the tomatoes used by the fast food restaurants are grown. And I went there because I had learned that undocumented workers were being exploited in the worst possible way. And in fact, ironically enough, on the day that I was in Immokalee, headlines in the paper, U.S. attorney charges a contractor there for slavery. 2007, a guy was being charged with slavery, forcing people to do involuntary labor. And what we did there and what we did after, I held a hearing with former Senator Ted Kennedy on this issue. We exposed what was going on in the fields, in tomato fields in Immokalee. The end result was we had some success, wages, working conditions improved. But that picks up on your point. When people have no legal rights, they can be exploited. It is not only bad for those people, obviously, but it is bad for every worker in America because it is part of the race to the bottom. If you can exploit ruthlessly an undocumented worker, that means you're going to pay lower wages to somebody who is a legal citizen. So what do we have to do? You're right. Workers have to come out. Undocumented workers have to be taken out of the shadows. I was in Phoenix 2 weeks ago, met with a number of young Hispanic kids, beautiful young kids, tears rolling out of their eyes, saying, we are afraid that we can be picked up and deported, or our moms and our dads can be deported. That has got to end. So what we need is to take the undocumented workers in this country, some 11 million people, out of the shadows. We have to give them legal status as soon as possible. We need comprehensive immigration reform. We need a path toward citizenship. And I will fight as hard as I can for that.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Senator. Too many Americans are being robbed of a secure retirement by anti-worker CEOs and politicians. What changes, if any, do you favor to Social Security, Medicare, or pensions? And if so, what are they? What other ideas do you have to ensure that Americans have an opportunity to retire with dignity?
Well, Jen, thank you very much for that question, because as you know, these are issues in every instance that I have worked very, very hard on. As everybody in the room knows, for the last many, many years, our Republican colleagues and some Democrats, sad to say, the Republicans have supported privatization of Social Security. Republicans today are supporting cuts to Social Security, either by raising the retirement age or moving toward the so-called chain CPI. As I think you know, a number of years ago, I led the effort to establish what we called the Defending Social Security Caucus, and we fought back. Rich Trumka, who's sitting there, will remember going to a press conference with me, along with the leadership of senior citizen organizations, the leadership of veterans organizations, the leadership of the National Organization of Women, the leadership of the disability community. And what all of us said loudly and clearly, at a time when millions of seniors can't make it on $12,000, $13,000, $14,000 a year, you damn well are not going to cut Social Security. And what I have done in the last year is not only led the fight against cutting Social Security, I think we are changing the conversation. And what we are now saying is we have got to expand Social Security benefits, and I've introduced legislation to do that. And the essence of how you do that is by lifting the cap on taxable income. Right now, as you know, multimillionaires contribute the same amount as somebody making $118,000. If you just start at $250,000, lift the cap on income above that, we can extend Social Security for many, many decades and expand Social Security benefits, and that is exactly what I intend to do as president. Furthermore, we have to deal with this phony situation that the Republicans are creating right now by threatening to cut disability benefits for millions of seniors by 19% because they refuse to allow the reconfiguration of the benefits going from the retirement fund now into the disability fund, which is having problems. We have to address that issue as well. In terms of pensions, a number of years ago in Vermont, IBM announced that they were doing away with the defined benefit plan that they had promised their workers. I have had many town meetings in the state of Vermont over the years. The largest one I ever had was when IBM workers came out. I think 700 or 800 of them came out. We stood with them. And we said to IBM, you made a promise to these workers, you're not going to cut their benefits, and actually we turned IBM around, not only in Vermont, but around this country. So what do we have to do? What we have to do is understand that Social Security today has a trust fund of some $2.7 trillion, can pay out all benefits for the next 18 years, not enough. We have to extend it. We have to expand benefits. We have to recognize that there is a significant pension crisis in America, that many corporations are taking away defined pension plans. As all of you know, in the last piece of legislation a number of years ago, workers who were promised pensions in these multi-employer pension plans lost their pensions. We have legislation in to work with them to make sure that they get what they are promised. So I want to congratulate the ARA for your great work on this issue. You have been one of the progressive senior groups in America. We have got to recognize.
Thank you, Senator.
Apology that seniors are doing so well. Many of them are hurting. We have to stand with them. Thank you.
Senator, now I'd like to turn to trade. And first of all, we'd like to thank you for helping us oppose Fast Track, and we know that you oppose the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Three-part question. Would you make changes to TPP, or would you scrap the agreement completely? Two, what standards meet your criteria for trade agreements with other nations? And three, would you like to comment on the administration's moving Malaysia from a Tier 3 country to a Tier 2 country on human trafficking, even though human trafficking has gotten worse in Malaysia?
Oh, Rich, we can go on and on for a couple of hours talking about these issues. Let me talk about Malaysia. If my memory is correct, there was a study done by the United States Department of Labor with regarding to workers' rights and working conditions in Malaysia. And what it said is that you have hundreds of thousands of workers coming in from other countries, migrant workers in Malaysia, who are held in almost slave-like conditions. Their passports are taken away from them. They have no rights. They can't get home to their families. They are overworked and they are underpaid. That is the reality, according to the U.S. Department of Labor. And in order to change the tier level to make it appear that Malaysia is, their conditions are consistent with what a sensible trade agreement is very unfortunate. You know, I'm a friend of President Obama. I work with him on many issues. But he is dead wrong on this whole TPP thing. So and it's not just President Obama. This, by the way, you know, Rich, and I know I don't have to tell you this. You know it better than anybody in America. When big money speaks, when corporate America speaks, when Wall Street speaks, when the drug company speaks, it appears that no matter what political party the president is, they end up going along with these trade agreements. And, you know, I was involved in NAFTA and all of the promises that were made from, you know, Clinton or from Bush, all of these guys about how great these trade agreements would be. All of them turned out to be horrifically inaccurate. My own view in terms of the TPP is I think we scrap it. I think we go back to the drawing board. And what are our goals? Is trade a bad thing unto itself? Of course not. We want to be able to export products. We want to be able to import products. But we want trade agreements that work for the working people of our country and for working people and poor people abroad. We do not want trade agreements, which is what the TPP is about, that primarily benefit the CEOs of large multinationals, the drug companies, and Wall Street. And that's the kind of trade agreement that we have got to craft. There is something fundamentally wrong when since 2001, we have lost 60,000 factories in America. Not all of it attributable to trade. There are other factors, but a lot of it has to do with trade. Bottom line is that for these trade agreements, enable corporate America, and that's why they wrote them, to shut down plants in America, not pay workers in Iowa or Vermont, $20-25 an hour, not obey environmental regulations, not provide health care, shut them down, move abroad, pay people pennies an hour, and bring their products back into the country. That is wrong. That whole fundamental approach is wrong and must be a new approach to trade must be developed. So, you know, that's kind of where I'm coming from on trade.
Senator Sanders, thank you for what you've done for federal employees also. But the jobs that public employees perform at all levels of government are important, yet we continue to underfund them. How would you address this issue, and would you end practices such as sequestration without imposing further cuts to federal employees' pay and benefits?
Well, Jane, I don't have to tell you the horrors of sequestration, not only for federal employees, but for the American people in general. And you are the last person I have to tell that probably more than any other entity, we are balancing the budget on the backs of federal employees to the tune of tens and tens and tens of billions of dollars. Look, What the Koch brothers and the right-wing Republicans who now control Congress want to see is essentially the doing away with virtually every major federal program established since FDR, which helps working families, the elderly, the children, the sick, and the poor. And you, because your people are federal employees, are bearing the brunt of those attacks. I believe it was for a period of 3 years, federal employees did not get one penny pay increase, 3 years. And now there are attacks on their pensions. And the motive behind this is to, for the Republicans, to tell young people all over this country, you don't want to be public employees. You don't want to work for the VA. You don't want to work for Social Security. You don't want to work for Medicaid. You don't want to be involved in programs that help the middle class and working people and low-income people. You don't want to go into the federal government because, by the way, we're going to privatize many of these programs over the years anyhow. So I happen to believe, as a mayor, as a congressman, and a United States senator, that the best way to deliver important public services is through a well-paid, well-trained, high-morale public employee system. So we are going to fight to preserve and expand those programs that protect the American people. We want those programs well-delivered with a high-morale workforce who are well-paid. So I think you can count me in as somebody who will fight for federal employees.
Senator, this will be another difficult question for you. Currently, around 11% of the workforce is unionized and have the ability to bargain with their employers. What changes in law or federal rules and regulations would you support to ensure that every American who wants to join a union is able to do so free from employer interference?
Well, Frederick, I was reminded recently that one of the first pieces of legislation I introduced when I was elected to the United States Congress in 1990 was the Employee Free Choice Act. What I believe, and I think the economists fully agree, is that when you talk about why the American middle class is declining, why so many people are working longer hours for lower wages, it has everything to do with the decline of trade unionism in America. And what trade unionism is about is not only making sure that workers can engage in collective bargaining and get decent wages for what they do, decent working conditions. And by the way, when that happens, it raises wages for all workers, including non-union workers. But when the Scott Walkers of the world and the Koch brothers of the world want to destroy trade unionism, they also understand that today, the trade union movement is the last line of defense against this right-wing corporate agenda, which is going to war against working families. And that's just the simple truth. And they can destroy the trade union movement. And they have made some progress in doing that. Who is going to defend working people, even those people who are not in union? So what do we have to do? We have to understand that a strong trade union movement is not only vitally important to the workers in unions, it's important to every American because it raises wages for all people. It gives working people a political voice in Washington and in state legislatures. So what I believe and I understand right now, I don't think there's any debate about this, is that we have millions of workers, not everybody, but you got millions of workers who do want to join a union. Well, you know what? If you want to join a union, you have the constitutional right to join in a union. It is wrong for employers who do this every single day to take somebody active in the union organizing effort and say, oh, by the way, you were late 4 years ago. Sorry, we're firing you. It is wrong for employers to take workers into a room and propagandize them on anti-union activity, to hire all these high-priced consultants who are trying to destroy the ability of workers to form a union. So we think workers need a fair shake to form a union if they want to. And what that means is the Employee Free Choice Act, or a version of that, which essentially says that if 50% plus one of workers in a bargaining union sign a card which says they want a union, you know what? They're going to have a union. And on top of that, We need legislation to tell employers that when a union is formed and when you start negotiating your first contract, you can't stall it and stall it and stall it. We have too many situations where employers never come to the table in an honest way and unions, workers become discouraged. So I am a strong advocate of the Employee Free Choice Act and the right of workers to negotiate a first contract. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Okay, last question. Senator Tammy Baldwin recently introduced a bill that tries to slow down the revolving door between the executive branch and Wall Street, in part by shutting down the golden parachutes people get when they leave big banks and go into government. Would you support legislation like this, and what other steps would you take to curb Wall Street excess?
The answer is yes, absolutely. As you know, I think I may be on Tammy's bill already. I am on Tammy's bill, and it's a very good piece of legislation. In terms of, let me just say a word on Wall Street, because it is a huge issue unto itself. You know, it is a funny thing, or not so funny, that as a result of the greed and the recklessness and the illegal behavior of Wall Street, these people drove our country into the worst economic downturn since the 1930s and the Great Depression. And the result of that, millions of people lost their jobs, their homes, and their life savings. And I often think about the fact that kids get arrest records for smoking marijuana, but not one of these CEOs who destroyed the American economy has an arrest record for committing one of the most egregious crimes that I can think of. That's got to change. And when we, as I mentioned, the SEC right now has passed a rule which will mandate that these corporations start telling us about the pay differential between the CEOs and the workers. My memory is that it's about 270, 300 times to one right now. Just stop and think. You know, and this is what greed is about, and this is what is destroying this country. Companies succeed based on the hard work of their employees. You have a ratio now of CEOs making some 300 times what their workers make. That ratio is worse, I believe, than any other major country on earth. That's got to change as well. In terms of Wall Street, last point that I would make, and that is when you have a handful of huge financial institutions, six of them, that are financial assets equivalent to 60% of the GDP of America, some $10 trillion. What we have to do is not only bring back Glass-Steagall and start seriously regulating these financial institutions. In my view, you've got to break them up. If a financial institution is too big to fail, in my view, it is too big to exist. We need a financial system which helps small and moderate-sized businesses, helps them create jobs, not operates as an island unto itself, just making as much money as they can for a small number of people. So that's my response to that.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Senator. That's the end of our questions. You have 10 minutes for closing.
Frederick and Rich, and all of you, Ken and Jan and Jane, and all those who are present, thank you all for what you're doing. These are tough times, and we have to acknowledge that these are tough times. And what my campaign has said over and over again, and I think I'm the only candidate to say this now and maybe ever, is I do not believe that any president, frankly, not Bernie Sanders, not anybody else, who is elected, can do what has to be done for working families and the middle class unless we have a massive grassroots movement of millions of people who are standing together and who are saying, you know, enough is enough. The billionaires can't have it all. This country belongs to all of us and not just a handful of wealthy people. They have the money. They certainly control the economy. That's why we get these disastrous trade agreements. They control the political process. That's why in the Republican budget, if you can believe it, they wanted to throw 27 million people off of health care, cut $90 billion for Pell Grants for our kids to be able to go to college, massive cuts in nutrition programs, and then they decided to give $250 billion in tax breaks to the richest 0.2%. That's because big money controls the political process. Now, as president, I will fight them tooth and nail, but I can't do it alone. We need this grassroots movement. We need what I call a political revolution. And at the center of that political revolution has got to be the trade union movement. And I say that not because I'm just talking to you. I say that all over the place. If we want to rebuild the crumbling middle class, if we want to address the fact that we have more children living in poverty than any other major country on earth, if we want to deal with this grotesque level of income and wealth inequality, where the top 0.1% owns as much wealth as the bottom 90%, where 58% of all new income today goes to the top 1%, where we're the only major country on earth that doesn't guarantee health care to all people, where we're the only major country that doesn't have family and medical leave, paid sick time, paid vacation time. The only way we bring about that agenda is through a movement which says to the billionaire class, you know what, we're on to what you're doing. You've been at war against workers for 30 years. That is going to end. This country is going to belong to all of us. And we can do that stuff. We can do it when we stand together, when we don't get divided up by race, by gender, by sexual orientation, by whether or not somebody was born in America or born in Mexico. When we stand together, we can accomplish that. And let me just conclude by telling you a little bit about the agenda that I have been bringing forth in this campaign. I talked about the Employee Free Choice Act, very important. Raising the minimum wage, $15 an hour. Rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure, creating up to 13 million jobs. Dealing with the special problem of youth unemployment. Kids who are graduating high school today, if they're white, 33%. If they're Hispanic, 36% unemployment and underemployment. If they're African-American, 51%. And then we wonder why we have more people in jail than any other country. We have got legislation in with John Conyers of Michigan to create 1 million jobs for our young people. We need a constitutional amendment to overturn this disastrous Citizens United Supreme Court decision. And I have said loudly and clearly that no nominee of mine to the Supreme Court will go to the Senate unless he or she is loud and clear in saying that one of their first orders of business will be to rehear and overturn Citizens United. In a highly competitive global economy, it is absurd that hundreds of thousands of bright young kids cannot afford to go to college. We need to make sure that public colleges and universities in this country are tuition-free, and we need to deal with the outrageous level of student debt in America, such that millions of people are paying 20-25% of their income at very, very high interest rates on student debt. We've got legislation to deal with both issues, substantially lowering interest rate on student debt, making public colleges and universities tuition free. As I mentioned to Jan a moment ago, our view is not just that you stop the cuts, the proposed cuts for Social Security and for benefits for disabled veterans. And I'm the former chairman of the Veterans Committee. I have fought and will fight to make sure that every veteran in this country gets all of the benefits and the health care that they are entitled to. And we have got to also and we can pay for tuition-free colleges and universities, for taking care of our veterans by making sure that we impose a Wall Street speculation tax that can raise substantial sums of revenue. I believe, and you have heard me say this over the years, that it is an international embarrassment that the United States of America is the only major country on earth that doesn't guarantee health care to all whites. it will be revolutionary in this country for people, for businesses, when we finally say that all people have health care. You don't have to work at a job you don't like because you get a health care. If you're a small businessman, you don't have to spend half your life worrying about how you're going to provide health care to your businesses, to your workers. Health care should be a right of all people, and that's why I have in the past and will in the near future introduce a Medicare for all single-payer program, high-quality, cost-effective health care for all Americans. So that's the fight that we're waging in this campaign. Those are some of the items, not all. Climate change, enormously important as well. But the essence here is that we have got to appreciate if we continue to do establishment-type politics, establishment-type economics, what will happen is the middle class will continue to decline. Working people will continue to work longer hours for low wages. It will be harder and harder for workers to join unions. We'll have more disastrous trade agreements. I believe from the bottom of my heart that if we stand together, there is nothing that we cannot accomplish. And that is what this campaign is about. It's not only electing Bernie Sanders. It's working with the trade union movement, working with seniors, working with young people, working with environmentalists, working with the women's community, working with the gay community, to bring all of our people together so that we create the kind of nation that you know and I know we can become. So I want to just conclude by thanking all of you for standing up for working people. I know that many of you have been doing it decade after decade, and millions of people owe you a debt of gratitude. I do. Thank you all very much for what you do.
Thank you.